Good morning. This is Focus, our second hour of the show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer and Jason Croft at the controls for this hour. Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. Earlier this year, the Illinois State Supreme Court announced that for the first time in the state's history, cameras and audio recording would be allowed in the state's trial courts. Illinois was one of 14 states where cameras either weren't allowed or they just weren't used. And we'll be talking this morning about some of the pros and cons of allowing cameras in the courts and what we think might happen as this moves along. And we have two guests with us, two guests who we know have contrasting viewpoints on this. Joining me here in the studio is Steve Beckett. He is a professor of law at the University of Illinois College of Law. He's director of the Trial Advocacy in the College of Law, where he teaches skills training courses in trial advocacy and client counseling. He is also of counsel to the Urbana law firm of Beckett and Weber PC, a firm that he founded in 1988. He's practiced law in Champaign-Urbana since 1973, with a main focus in litigation and appeals, also those things both in criminal cases and in civil cases. And joining us by telephone is Professor Nancy Martyr. She's professor of law at Chicago Kent College of Law. She's been there since 1990. Before that, she was associate professor of law at the University of Southern California Law School, where she taught since 1993. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome from people who are listening. Questions, comments, as long as people can be brief. And we just ask that to get as many callers in as possible to keep things moving along. But callers are certainly welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We have a toll-free line. Good any place you can hear us. And that's 800-222-9455. And there's email as well. So if you want to write, you can do that, will-talk@illinois.edu. And here in studio with me, Steve Beckett, thank you very much for being
here. Good morning.
And joining us by telephone, Professor Nancy Martyr. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us. I know that, Professor Martyr, maybe I'll just start by asking a general question to you, and I know that this is something where you definitely have reservations, and you have written about this as it applies to federal court, and I think some of the same arguments certainly apply. This is something that people here in Illinois, particularly people in media, have been calling for a long time. I wonder if you have some thought about why now, at this point, finally, in the year 2012, the Supreme Court, the Illinois State Supreme Court, has agreed to allow this to happen.
I don't have an idea why now, but I think there's a general trend to opening up courts to cameras. And the debate has certainly been happening on the federal level. Both the federal courts, district, and courts of appeals have been talking about this and are now undertaking a pilot program. And it's certainly been discussed on the U.S. Supreme Court level, with Congress always thinking about legislation requiring oral argument to be televised at the U.S. Supreme Court. So it could be that the discussion going on at the federal level has had an effect on the state level as well.
Yeah. I may turn to Steve Beckett, because this is certainly, I know that you, because you've done a lot of work in the area of First Amendment, I think you've been one of the people who have said for a long time now that you think that this should happen. Do you have some sense why now this is finally happening?
I think in many respects, because our judges are elected, our Supreme Court judges are elected, that it's part of the political process. And there is a trend towards openness in government and media coverage. We see city council meetings, county board meetings, the legislature, et cetera, now all being available on a pretty much meeting-by-meeting daily basis. And I think this is just a step towards having the courts available for that as well. Certainly the coverage of a court is different than those other areas, but I think it's a transparency trend.
Yeah, and you think that it is the case that there has been a greater expectation that government would be open and visible in that kind of way, and that this is just following along that trend?
Yes, and also the fact that other states, other courts have been open for television coverage, media coverage, full media coverage, and the world hasn't ended. Because the argument always was the world will end. and we won't have fair trials, and it'll be nightmares. And it didn't end. The courts in those states are functioning quite nicely, thank you. And this is, in essence, seeing if Illinois can be brought within the ambit of the modern world.
Yeah. One of the things, Professor Martyr, that I noted in a particular paper that you wrote about this was that while there may be a lot of anecdotal evidence one way or another for cameras either being good or not, that in fact there hasn't been a much in the way of a rigorous academic study of whether or not it's a good thing, or what sort of impact it has.
That's correct. I would say the best study was done by the Federal Judicial Center back in 1994, and even that study admitted that there were a lot of methodological weaknesses. And now the Federal Judicial Center is conducting a new study, a pilot program, so we might get better information. But states in general have done a terrible job surveying the effects, and usually it consists of just asking a few judges, well, you know, do you think it made a difference? And so the judges get to give their perception, and so it's very small numbers, very anecdotal. It doesn't tell us whether there's an effect. It just tells us whether the judges think it made a difference.
And I think here in the case of Illinois, it sounds as if the way the Supreme Court is talking about this, they think that this is yet an experiment, and they have granted a number of counties permission to do this, although Cook County, they have said no. We have to wait.
We're putting our coverage toe in the water to get a feel for what the water is like, and we're only letting do it outside of Cook County, and it's such a hybrid. A judge can say no. It appears a witness can turn to the judge and say, I don't feel comfortable with this, and the judge can say no. So I'm not sure what we'll learn from this experiment. Yeah.
And that's, I think it's important to explain to people that indeed there are a lot of restrictions here, that that in each judicial circuit, the chief judge has to go to the Supreme Court and say, may we do this, Your Honors? And the court says, okay. And then in each trial, the judge in that trial has the ability either to say yes or no for that particular trial. So, and then, in addition, there are restrictions about you can't photograph jurors. And if this is a divorce or if it involves juveniles, you're not going to have cameras there. So there are a lot of qualifications on in what circumstances you can do this.
Yeah, I don't want to keep talking, but some of them make logical sense. We don't want the focus to be on the jury. I'm sure that's true in virtually every jurisdiction that has cameras in the court, that the idea isn't to have these dramatic close-ups of a juror who, you know, shockingly reacts to the witness testimony. No. I think the idea is an information about how the courts, how they function, what the witnesses say, instead of getting it through filters, that the audience receives it straight. Yeah.
Professor Martyr, let me ask you, because as I said, I know that you have some reservations about this and have basically argued, at least as far as the federal courts are concerned, that it's something that one ought to go slow on.
That's right.
Tell me just overall what you think of the idea. Say, now we're talking about trial courts. We're talking about state trial courts. What it is you're feeling about whether or not it is a good idea to allow a television camera in that court to show the proceedings?
I think it's not a good idea. If I were going to start anywhere, I would start with courts of appeal or the Supreme Court, you know, some version of an appellate court. I think you run a particular risk in trial court because you're dealing with witnesses, jurors, parties, lawyers, a lot of different people. And even though I am a big fan of access to the courtroom and education about the judiciary and what it does, I think that there's an overriding concern here with maintaining a fair trial. And even though this is a public proceeding, and so there are members of the public present in the courtroom, I think we want to be very careful about making sure that people feel comfortable coming into the courtroom. And it's a very hard exercise for witnesses, for jurors, and now it becomes even more difficult with the possibility that their images end up on television or on YouTube or on the internet forever.
Yeah. It can't. I'll turn here to Steve Beckett because I'm interested in, again, having your reaction. I think that one would say that it cannot help but have an influence on the proceeding in some number of ways.
And, you know, I have been a criminal defense lawyer my entire career, and so I'm obviously concerned about a fair trial. And I think there was a time when I probably would have leaned toward, the scenario that's been expressed. But the equipment now is so tiny, yeah, you can't even tell that it's there. I was on the county board for 10 years. All of our meetings were covered. You end up not paying any attention whatsoever to the fact that the camera is there. I mean, you still say stupid things and do stupid things because you're not thinking about it. You're wrapped up in what's in front of you. I happen to think that the effect of having cameras in trial courts will be just the opposite. I want the judge thinking that the public is now seeing him. I think unwatched courts are troublesome courts. We saw that in Gaylord in Cook County. We don't have a lot of folks who come to court nowadays and watch what's going on. By increasing scrutiny on the courts, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the judges. These judges are elected officials, and we have retention ballots. People need to know if they're rude or boorish, and having cameras in the court is no longer anecdotal. You can see it for yourself. And again, we're not getting the information isn't being filtered for us.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to the issue of accountability, particularly for judges, for a moment. But I want to just have you talk a little bit more or ask another question about the effect, the potential effect of having the cameras there on witnesses, people who are testifying. And never having had this experience, I would expect that no matter what, it's going to be difficult and stressful, and that even somehow on some level knowing that the camera was there would make it more stressful and possibly make you either make one more reluctant to testify or to hold back and to be make it even more than you would have ordinarily for you to thinking now, how do I answer this question? Do I answer this question? That it's just going to make being a witness that much more difficult.
I think every point that you've made is a natural point about being a witness, period. And so it's really becomes a question of degree. And again, it seems to me that once we get comfortable, once the system gets comfortable with the presence of the technology in the courtroom, then preparing witnesses will include reminding that this is being covered. Ultimately, I think the effect will be small, if any.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour of focus, Stephen Beckett. He's professor of law at the University of Illinois Law School, and also as an experienced trial attorney. Here in the studio with me, joining us by telephone, is Nancy Martyr. She's a professor at Chicago Kent College of Law. We are talking about cameras in the courts and about the fact that earlier this year in January, the Illinois State Supreme Court announced that for the first time that cameras would be allowed in Illinois trial courts with a number of restrictions that we have discussed. And a number of counties have applied for the permission to allow cameras in, and permission has been granted. One, as we have noted, though, one important exception is Cook County. The court seems to think that this is an experiment and wants to see how it goes first before they get into the biggest county that we have in the state of Illinois. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to go back to Professor Martyr and have you talk a little bit about the idea that Professor Beckett here talked about, and that was that he thinks maybe it would be a good thing for judges to be aware that their behavior was being monitored or potentially was being monitored.
Well, I think the problem is that either people say they will have no effect on judges and lawyers, they'll just go about their business, or that it will have an effect and it'll make judges behave better. So I think you can't have it both ways. But there's also a chance that it has a bad effect. And I think that we see that in some of the outlier cases, the extreme cases, the O.J. Simpson case, the Menendez brothers, where the judge and lawyers are affected by the cameras in a harmful way. And I admit that those cases are rare, but I think the effect they have on people's views of the judiciary is significant. So I'm not sure that we can expect it will have no effect or just better behavior. And I think another problem is that of unintended consequences, that we just don't know how judges will respond. And I think one response is you start doing more of your work in chambers and less of your work in the courtroom. This is particularly the case at the appellate level. There's nothing that mandates oral argument.
I think this is an interesting point, that if the judges and the attorneys know that proceedings in open court are indeed open, that whatever they can do, if they have something really sensitive or difficult or something that they got to work out, whatever they can do behind closed doors, they will do.
And I think we see this everywhere. C-SPAN records congressional speeches, but no real business takes place in front of the camera. So too with the president's State of the Union. You know, that's not where decisions are made. And I would guess that happens at city council meetings as well, that the camera comes in and the real decision-making moves somewhere else.
And I don't know, Steve, maybe you'd say, well, that's the way it is.
It is right now, because when you're in court, a record is being created. Right now, it's a transcripted or an audio recorded record as opposed to a video record. But that's why things are done in chambers. That's why agreements are reached outside, and then you go through the perfunctory ceremonial requirement of doing the plea or doing the agreed order or whatever it is in court. And you know, my reaction is, I see a difference already. You know, I have a court watching program and have had for many years here in town. And I suggest to you that I think judges behave differently when there are people in their courtroom besides just the litigants and the attorneys. That when the public's there, they pay attention to the public. And that's good. I think that's good. Yeah. And are there some judges who would not be affected at all and will still be rude and boorish? You bet your life, because that's the way they are. And if that's the way they are, the public ought to know it.
Yeah. Well, I agree that that's good, and that's why I think we have to take seriously keeping the courtroom open to members of the public, press, parties. What I'm worried about is the after effect when the image gets played again and again on YouTube. That makes it much harder and distorted. Perhaps.
Actually, I disagree with that, because, you know, Nancy Grace doesn't paint an accurate picture.
No,
Fox News, MSNBC, they all have their point of view. I mean, we see this in Trayvon Martin. Instead of us getting the factual data directly from the witness's mouth, you know, we get the filter. The filter shapes the information that we get and puts a spin on it, and it's difficult for us to decide what really happened. If the camera's in court and I actually get to hear the judge, or I actually get to hear the witness, I got the data directly. I don't have to worry about that filter, and I think I can come up with my own conclusions about what happened.
But I think the danger, and I'm, you know, I'm a media guy, but I think we know what will happen, particularly if we're talking about the way that television will cover trials. They'll do what they do now, and what we'll do is we'll have a day of very complicated proceedings and arguments and motions that will get reduced to a couple of minute report, and they will focus on the most dramatic aspects, which may not be the most significant. And so the only difference is, well, instead of having a drawing of somebody that the court artist made, we'll actually see the person say, you know, about a 5 or 10 second statement of what they said on the witness stand. And if that's what most people see, I'm not sure that that really will accomplish much in terms of this larger idea of them understanding how, you know, how courts work.
My comparative answer is the Affordable Care Act arguments in the United States Supreme Court, where for the first time we got live audio that day, and we got the Q&A between judge and attorney, and there were commentaries about how bad the Solicitor General did, et cetera. Yeah. But I'm telling you, that coverage was so much better than it was to just have people sitting in the courtroom and come out and tell us what they said or to read the words that they said. And I just think we're going to enhance that by video images. Are there going to be problems? Of course there are. Will there be sound bites? Of course there will. But, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Let me ask Professor Martyr, I know one of the things that you have said, well, maybe what we could do at the very least would be, say, have transcripts or perhaps audio, or maybe you would say, well, go ahead and have the video. Have that made available, but not in real time. That is, create a website where you would have that and you could post it, say, at the end of the day. Or, what the Supreme Court does when they have arguments now, the sound recordings at the end of that week where the arguments were made, then you can go to the Supreme Court website and you can listen to those. Would that make you feel any better if there was that little bit of at least lag in this becoming available?
Well, the lag certainly makes me feel better. I very much support having transcripts available and audio available. Stop, though, is with the video. So when you go listen to the Supreme Court oral argument, you hear them. And when you watch it on C-SPAN, you see little photographs, but you don't see the actual interaction in courtroom. And I think that is a good thing. And for the Affordable Care Act, I actually listened to the C-SPAN argument, read the transcript, and then read the New York Times coverage. And I got the most out of reading the transcript. And, of course, I could see how remarks got pulled out with just the coverage. So what I'm trying to avoid is getting everything reduced to the soundbite that distorts what the case is really about.
The judges that you talk to about this subject will say, I'm for cameras in the courtroom, but they must be there every day, all day, so that the public sees the monotony that I have to deal with, as opposed to coming in for this sensational trial, where this, that, et cetera. So you can understand the point of view. But I think it's a lofty goal to have transparency. I think it's a lofty goal to have people fully understand that the courts are not these mysterious places where lawyers get to speak in their own private language, et cetera, and that over time the public will be much better educated about the courts if we permit this kind of coverage.
Has it happened so far? I mean, states have had cameras in the courtroom for decades. I don't see that education taking place.
Well, I think it's a little bit exaggerated to say for decades. I think sometime in the 80s we started seeing it. We got more in the 90s. We've had more in the 2000s. Has there been a learning curve? You bet your life. But I also think the technology in the last 10 or 15 years has dramatically improved. And I think there are many things that we'll be able to do that were objected to in the past. Mm-hmm. I just remember I was telling David off the air that, I got involved in a controversy about a coverage of a local quasi-judicial hearing about a license revocation in a massage parlor case and filed a lawsuit to try to get television studio covered. I remember what the equipment was like at the time. It wasn't the huge cameras like Billy Saul Estes, but they were better. And now the cameras are, when I see the size of the cameras and the ability to do the audio and video recording together, it's just nothing.
Yeah, I think that I absolutely agree. There have been huge strides, and we no longer have to worry about the cameras creating a distraction in the courtroom as they once did in the early phase. I think what we really need to worry about, though, is now how quickly images are communicated and to what vast numbers and for how long. And so it's the afterlife that I'm really worried about, not the actual camera in the courtroom. And images are very powerful. It's what we take away so that the words and arguments get forgotten. And it's just the image.
Right. But right now, the danger I think we have is we have an afterlife, but it's a filtered afterlife. And it exists out there, and now it's being posted on the Internet and sent everywhere, and it's the same point that I made about Fox News and MSNBC and the whatever spin, whatever side, whatever approach that you want. And if it's going to be done, it should be done accurately. And I think that the coverage enhances accuracy.
Yeah. Professor Martyr, I know I referred to several times to this paper that you wrote, but I think you raise a number of really interesting points. And actually, one of the things that you mention is that you think that perhaps that as time goes along and as people, we have people become attorneys and judges who grew up with YouTube and Facebook, that maybe they will be more at ease with this idea that, yes, our lives are public in that sort of a way, and things get out there and they're out there forever, and that they may feel, it may not worry them as much as it worries us.
I think that's right. I think I'm fighting a losing battle here. So I just wanted to recognize that. All that I'm calling for is for us to proceed carefully and incrementally. I think the courts work very well in general. I think judges do a very good job, and they have a hard job, a lot of balancing to undertake. And I don't want to sacrifice the good work that judiciaries do. And I don't want to overestimate the benefits of cameras. I think they play a role, but I want to proceed very slowly because what courts have done is so important. And we don't. Once you bring them in, it's very hard to take them out. So it's a caution just not to go with the latest thing, just because we see it in so many other places, that this particular world of the judiciary does a good job, and we don't want to threaten that.
We're talking this hour a focus about cameras in the courts and about the fact that the Illinois State Supreme Court did announce earlier in the year that for the first time ever here in the state of Illinois, cameras would be allowed in the state's trial courts. And we're talking about some of the pros and cons with the two guests, Nancy Martyr from Chicago Kent College of Law and Steve Beckett from the University of Illinois College of Law. And we'll have some more conversation after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Fernando Trueba, the director of the Oscar-nominated animated musical Chico and Rita. Also, Jason DeParl, who covers poverty for the New York Times, examines how the 1996 welfare reform law has affected the poor during the recession and how some politicians now want to apply those welfare reforms to Medicaid and food stamps. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and we have different topics every day. Tomorrow morning we'll have, in the first hour, a show about the care of companion animals. We'll have Brendan McKiernan with us. He's a professor of veterinary medicine at the U of I College of Medicine. So if you have questions about the animals in your life, you can call in. In the second hour tomorrow, we'll talk about homelessness in Champaign and Vermilion counties with Beverly Baker, director of community impact with United Way of Champaign County, and Reverend Irvin Williams. He's the executive director and pastor of Restoration Urban Ministries. We'll have some more talk about homelessness next week on the program on Monday, trying to get a little bit bigger picture, talking about homelessness in the United States. And there our guest will be Tanya Tall, president and CEO of Partnering for Change at the National Institute for Innovative Strategies to Combat Family Homelessness and Poverty. And you can find out what we'll do for the rest of next week by going to the website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. In this hour of Focus, we are talking about cameras in the courts. In January, the Illinois State Supreme Court announced that for the first time in the history of the state of Illinois, cameras would be allowed in the state's trial courts with some significant restrictions. And we're talking a little bit here about the pros and cons of cameras in the courts. And we have two guests who have contrasting points of view. Steve Beckett is here with me in the studio. He's professor of law at the University of Illinois and is also of counsel to the Urbana firm of Beckett and Weber, a firm that he founded in 1988. He's practiced law in Champaign-Urbana since 1973. And joining us by telephone is Nancy Martyr, She's professor of law at Chicago Kent College of Law. And questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. And here's a caller to bring into the conversation, someone who's listening in Piatone on our line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Thanks. I like the subject. I was wondering, now I got a mind blank. I'm sorry, I got to apologize. I had a list of things I was going to ask, and now I kind of lost it.
You can go think about it. You can call us back. That's okay.
One of those days where you can't think straight.
Oh, believe me, I have days like that every day, often from 10 to noon. All right.
Thank you.
Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I wanted to ask, I'm really curious about the thoughts of the guest. I think that one of the arguments for the cameras being in the courts is so that people can get a more realistic idea about what happens in court. And the argument now is that, well, what people know about court is from watching Law and Order, and that's not like what it really is. So here, I guess what I'm curious about, I'll start with Steve and I'll go to Nancy Marner. What do you think people's ideas of a trial and of what goes on in court, what do you think they think goes on there that is actually a distortion of what really goes on?
I think that it is based on Law and Order type or movie type images, and that there is great drama, emotional confrontation, brilliant arguments, and gray-haired judges who in wise ways, make decisions. Whereas not that those stereotypes don't exist in some way, in some pieces and shapes, but it really is much more human. In many respects, it doesn't have the emotional confrontive, not that there isn't courtroom drama, and we trial lawyers all talk about those courtroom moments, the one we remember forever, and then we put our spin on it and we talk about it, forever. Mm-hmm. It's Professor Martyr was talking about transcripts. I think for lawyers, one of the disappointments after they finish their closing argument is to later read a transcript of their closing argument because they thought they were so much more articulate than they really were.
So brilliant, right? As they thought they had been. Yeah.
And so I think the video aspect of it may help. I use video in my trial advocacy program. I'm sure they do up at Kent as well, because how we portray ourselves in a persuasive way, I think, is very important.
And I'm sure when the students see themselves, they're just horrified.
Well, they are. They are. And we all have patterns of speech. We all have little tics that we do that we're not aware with, that we're not aware that we do. And I think it's important to note that. And I actually think that video coverage could make for better lawyers.
Yeah. I assume, Professor Martyr, you would agree with probably all of that.
I would, and I would add that programs like Judge Judy, the TV reality judge programs, serve as a basis for a lot of people's perception of what goes on in a courtroom. And so the empirical studies that have been done of people who watch these shows and then come into an actual courtroom, they expect a loud, opinionated judge who reaches a snap decision and resolves the dispute very quickly with no recourse to the law. And so, that if that's the model, that's not a very good model for what actually goes on in a courtroom or what a judge actually does. On the other hand, I'm not convinced that the TV format will be conducive to conveying what really goes on in a courtroom.
I accept that criticism, but I think it's no different than us being able to tell the newspaper reporters what to write, what to cover, how to write it, or the people on the news who have been in court watching the proceedings to do the same thing. And I think we have to trust the marketplace of courtroom coverage to eventually you know, get it right. I think that's the whole point of transparency.
Yeah. I think it's something else that I think is true, at least I've read about this, is that the kind of programming that we see with this emphasis on forensic science has also given people, when they then serve on juries, the expectation that someone's going to come in there and say, well, we collected this evidence and we did these tests and we nailed it. And I can tell you that this is what happened and that this is the person that's guilty. And it's just, and that's another aspect of the real trial. It's just, it's not like that.
That's correct.
It's not like that. Well, we have our caller back from Piatone. We'll go right there. Our toll-free line. Hello.
I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay.
Oh, I was driving too, and I shouldn't have been. So
Go. Don't talk and drive.
Exactly. No, I disagree with having cameras in there. I think one of the problems that, in my perspective, if you're a client that's going up in front of something, you know, if you're a defendant, or you know, if you're the person that's being on trial, there's a lot of emotions going through, especially the high-profile cases. And I'll give you one example: is that Trayvon Martin case. Nobody knows what exactly went on right now. They're still investigating. But in the history of this country, it seems like every time you get a high-profile case out there, things get twisted around. The media ends up throwing things in there, and then it causes a house of fire. And you got Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and all these other people, you know, making their agenda be heard. Which, you know, to me, I think it's turned into a circus for a sad situation. And I mean, whatever it be, even on local basis, I've seen this firsthand, where somebody is flat out convicted of something they didn't do. And yet, even if you're not convicted, even if you're proven innocent, you've got the stigma over your head for the rest of your life. And it's not fair to those persons that are obviously innocent. And I think the media is got to take a little bit, step it up, and take a little bit more responsibility by having those cameras in the classroom or in the courtroom. I think it's going to portray everybody in a bad light, including lawyers and attorneys who would be fighting for somebody, and it makes them look bad. Now, what's your comment? I get off, and thank you, and I apologize for laughing.
No, that's right. I think in part we addressed some of that, but I think it's good to come back to this. And what Steve, I think what you said earlier was you thought actually the kind of thing that the caller was talking about, that's actually a good reason. That's an argument to have that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when I got here this morning, one of the first things I said to you was Trayvon Martin is a perfect example. The filters are already in place. The spinsters are already in place. We're getting spoon-fed information that people want us to get to make their point and to argue. It's a hate crime. It's not a hate crime. It was justified. It wasn't justified. People should have guns. They shouldn't have guns. You know, whatever it is. And instead of having that, and I think Professor Martyr is correct, people will still be doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think her concern is now they'll have snippets that they will use to do it. Well, they're doing it now without the snippets. And to me, at least the snippets, if out there in the marketplace, the competing snippets will be accurate because we were there. We saw it. We heard it.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything, Professor Martyr, you'd want to add to that?
Well, I think this kind of trial, while I realize there's a lot of public attention, what goes on in the courtroom in this kind of trial is of particular concern to sort of tamp things down to make sure that the high-profile nature of the case, the defendant still gets a fair trial. And so it's in this kind of case that I particularly worry about lawyers and judges and parties and the media. And while you can never stop the media's coverage, and we wouldn't want to, I think when you go into the courtroom, it shouldn't be a distraction, and it shouldn't be a distraction to the witnesses or to the jurors. And so while we can't resolve what goes on outside of the courtroom, we do need to make sure that within the courtroom there is an environment conducive to a fair trial.
Well, just to come back to one point that I think Steve Beckett made in the first half of the conversation, but I think it's good to reinforce that as an attorney, you're going to spend time talking with the witnesses that you're calling so you can try to prepare them as best as you can for the experience, that it's going to be difficult, it's going to be stressful, and that you seem to be saying that you got to do that anyway, and that you don't really think that having the camera there is going to be that much. It's going to be stressful anyway. It's going to be that much worse.
It is. The caller made the point about the emotional effect on the defendant, and it occurred to me talking to jurors after a case was over, and they would say something about the way the defendant appeared in court and how he seemed distracted, wasn't paying attention, etc. This is just another variation of that. It's one of the things that you talk to your client about, and now the client has to sort of worry about media coverage and the camera focusing on the client. Well, that to me, that reinforces what I'm trying to tell the client to do, to be engaged, be concerned, to not yawn or laugh or, you know, whatever other strange behaviors they would do. So it's a different kind of trial preparation, sure. The other point that I would make about Trayvon and those kinds of cases is that we always say big cases make bad law. Big cases are always present difficulty. O.J. Is a bad example, I think, for what the potential of media coverage is. I don't know if O.J. were tried, that murder case were tried again today, whether it would be any better or any worse. I would hope that it would be better. I think we learned something from the kind of coverage in the O.J. case. I think coverage can be improved. I think that the technology can improve it. But I don't see any reason to not have the transparency, to not have the education that is available.
Yeah.
I think it puts an added burden on the parties and the defendant and the witnesses. And while that person goes into the courtroom knowing it's a live performance, it's an added burden knowing, and it's going to be played out before millions of people versus just the people in the courtroom. And the comparison I would use is in the classroom. You try and create a certain environment. You're before students, and students are before each other, and you want to make it conducive to teaching and learning. If you knew that the camera was there projecting your class to the entire country, you would feel differently about it, and it would affect your behavior and as teacher, and it would affect the students. And that's what I seek to avoid.
We have about 6-7 minutes left on the show. We have a couple of callers, so I'm trying to get them in, going next to Belgium and line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning to you all. And I'm afraid I'm going to open up a can of worms here. I've been on juries many times, many, many times. And recently, when I'm called for jury duty, I refuse to do it. And because I refuse to do it, the judges usually make me sit in the back of the courtroom and say, "Mr. Jurist, you've got to do this because we don't think you're being right." And the reason why I don't want to be a jurist is because you probably should put the camera in the jury room and watch the deliberation, because it's so easy to manipulate a jury and see people manipulate juries, and the justice that is supposed to be dispensed is not without bias. So how are you getting justice if you don't have unbiased jurists that are going to be dealing with it? And that's where I think maybe the camera ought to be, so you can see actually how that process plays out and whether the person really got the fair trial that he should deserve.
Well, here, this is yet another end. Difficult.
That's a different topic. It really is a skill set for me. In having my students seriously think about the jury selection process. Are there difficulties with jurors sometimes and the way that they function? Sure. But I really don't see how the camera coverage in the courtroom is going to make that different.
I would add, though, that it could make it harder to get jurors, that there are jurors who have expressed the view that they would not want to appear inadvertently on TV, and we already have a problem getting summoned jurors to appear or to appear and to serve, as the caller suggested. So I think it's one more thing that makes it a challenge for the juror to perform his or her job.
I sometimes feel that the critics of cameras in the courtroom go, we shouldn't have cameras in the courtroom. Now let's figure out why. We're going to start listing the reasons. Now, the jurors aren't going to be on the cameras, but they could be, and therefore we shouldn't have cameras in the courtroom.
Well, I do start from the perspective of the parties, everybody in the courtroom, and sort of work out from there.
Sure.
But I guess I take the point that it's difficult to get people to serve on juries, and this might be one more thing that they're going to put in there on their list of reasons why I do not want to go down and serve.
Well, I think there's a premise that that we start with lots of people don't want to serve. And now we're giving them another reason. That's really the logic that I see going on here.
Right. One more caller, at least in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I'm wondering about evidence that is brought up in front of the jury and then stricken from the record. What would you do with that on a live feed?
It happens, and it's covered in the media now. So we see a news story about mention of a confession that had been suppressed, and there was coverage about that suppression, and now it happened. It happened in the jury, and the judge told the jury to disregard it. It's real. It really does happen. If I am looking at that trial and wanting to understand what happened, I think I'm entitled to know that. Again, to me, it's just another coverage piece.
And I think it shows, once again, the complexity of the issues, that it's a chance for jurors to see evidence that they shouldn't see. The caller gave the example of if it's stricken from the record, but even if it's kept from the jury, and it does make it harder to find jurors, perhaps, if you need a retrial. And while all of these things make it harder and make it more difficult in the future, I think we're making the job of the trial judge and the trial just more complicated with the introduction of cameras.
I think to a person that the trial judges agree with you, they don't want cameras. They don't. They don't want it. They think it makes their job more complex.
Doesn't it?
Sure. And my reaction is that that's one of the reasons why I want it.
I'm going to hang up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. If someone wants to go real quick, we may be able to get you in. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, as I have said a couple of times, it seems that the Illinois Supreme Court thinks this is an experiment. We're going to see how this goes, that they have given the permission of some counties to do it, except Cook. They're going to have to wait. I'll ask first Steve Beckett and then Nancy Martyr. Do you have any sort of sense how this is going to go, or in fact, even how many trials will be deemed important enough by local news media actually to ask to cover it like this?
We're in Illinois. I don't know what else to say. We figure out a way to make things as convoluted as possible. There'll be some positive experiences, I suppose, and there'll be some negative experiences. But as I said, I think ultimately we'll determine that the world goes on. Yeah. And it's not as bad as everybody said it would be, and I think we'll move forward.
Well, Professor Martyr, you're the one that I think has the reservations. What do you think?
Well, I agree with Steve. The world goes on. I guess my bottom line is I don't want to make the job of a trial judge more difficult than it is. I want them to perform their job, to focus on their job, and to have as few distractions, to focus on what's going on in the courtroom. So anything that's making it more difficult, I think we should refrain from doing. While I am a big supporter of access to the courtroom and of education about judges, I think we have to keep the trial as the centerpiece. Mm.
We're almost done here, but one further question. This is a little bit different, but I'm curious of what you would have to say. Professor Martyr, do you think that the United States Supreme Court will ever allow cameras in to film their proceedings?
I go back to my generational point. It might be as we get new justices that they will move in that direction, because I think the two newest justices are in favor of that, but the more senior justices are not. So we might see a change over time.
I think the generational point is a really good one. And that's why I think that while it may be challenging for a trial judge to have to deal with media coverage, a good judge will be able to do that just as they take on other tasks that get added year after year when new rules are passed or new cases are decided that they have to worry about. This is just one more thing that they will have to do.
Well, we, for now, will have to stop. We have here at the end of the time. We'll see how this goes. Perhaps we can have another opportunity to talk about this. For the moment, we'll say thanks to our guest, Nancy Martyr. She's professor of law at Chicago Kent College of Law. Professor Martyr, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And here in studio with me, Steve Beckett. He's professor of law here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.
Thank you, thanks. And thank you, Professor Martyr.